we don't expect to see short-term warning. We can have these kind of large eruptions pretty much at any time.
Readout blows again, sending ash to the Kenai Peninsula. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 26th of March. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Governor Palin names a new Attorney General.
He will make an exceptional Attorney General. I'm so grateful that he has really fulfilled this call back to public service.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Association of Alaska School Boards. Fostering safe, connected schools is a foundation for academic achievement through annual school climate surveys. Information at aasb.org.
Mount Redoubt exploded this morning with its highest ash cloud yet, sending a plume 65,000 feet in the air. An hour before, the volcano pushed out ash to 30,000 feet. Redoubt recorded several other smaller seismic events today. The activity shut down most flights in and out of Anchorage and the Kenai Peninsula and sent a cloud across Cook Inlet that scattered trace amounts of ash on areas south of Nanilchek. KBBI's Casey Kelly has more.
In Kenai, directly across from Mount Redoubt, the eruption had volcano watchers turning out on the banks of Cook Inlet to look for ash. On a clear day, you can see Redoubt from here, but today it is obscured by dark clouds. Most people are like Brandy Henry, an art student who pulls up to snap a few photographs.
I came down to see if I could get a few pictures. I have to actually go back to my art class at the college in like 20 minutes, so we're doing white stuff, so I figured, hey, this would be great.
Little, if any, ash fell in Kenai, with the heaviest amounts falling south of Nanilchik and around Kachemak Bay. Still, Henry says the cloud itself was an impressive sight.
It looks to me, it looks like a wave. You know, like people who go surfing, they see those big blue waves coming at them. It looks like a big blue wave of something.
In Homer, where trace amounts of ash started to hit the ground shortly after 2 in the afternoon, people were stocking up on masks and other supplies throughout the morning. Ulmer's drug and hardware manager Debbie Herbert says sales have picked up since Redoubt first erupted Sunday night.
Ever since the first eruption, it's been a steady stream of people coming in looking for masks and pantyhose and different things like that. So first aid kits. So it looks like people are getting prepared.
Like many customers, Tara Smith was buying pantyhose and rubber bands. She says her husband requested the items.
He told me to get rubber bands to cover a 3-inch hole, so I really don't know what he's putting them on. I didn't ask.
Pantyhose can be used as a simple filter to keep ash out of your car's air system. At Sunny Service Auto Shop on Pioneer Avenue, mechanic George Anderson says he's had a few people ask him how to put pantyhose on their air intake, but he says he doesn't recommend the pantyhose method, which will plug up with heavier amounts of ash and can even come loose and wind up clogging the air system anyway. He says you'd be better served by a pre-filter material sold at most auto supply stores.
It's just a bat of looks like insulation. It's about an inch thick and it'll hold a lot more dirt.
And with just a trace or an eighth of an inch of ash falling in most spots and plenty of melting snow and ice on the ground, Anderson says even the pantyhose are probably unnecessary.
When the ash hits the ground, it's going to get wet. It's going to absorb moisture, turn into mud, and then it's not going to be airborne. And if it's not airborne, it can't get into your car.
He says if you have the type of car heater that recirculates air from inside the heater, to turn that on because it will avoid pulling any ash inside the car. If your car doesn't have that feature, he says, keep the fan on low. In Homer, with help from Ben Stanton in Kenai, I'm Casey Kelly.
Redoubt's activity today happened without warning after a lull yesterday when the Alaska Volcano Observatory lowered the volcano's alert level. Stephanie Prejean is an aviogeophysicist. She says that's exactly what scientists anticipated. She says once a volcano is erupting, they don't need to make any noise as they send up magma.
At this point, we have a wide open system. And so for the most of the rest of the eruption, we don't expect to see short-term warning. We can have these kind of large eruptions pretty much at any time.
Prejean says the explosions today likely came from deep within Redoubt, as if the volcano was shooting molten rock from the barrel of a gun. The largest explosion this morning lasted about 9 minutes. Prejean says the ash plume was the highest generated so far by the volcano, but that doesn't mean it was the biggest explosion.
It's not necessarily the largest in terms of ash output because its duration was pretty short compared to some of what we saw on Sunday night and Monday morning.
During the 1989 eruption of Readout, explosion events lasted as long as 40 minutes and created much larger ash clouds. Prejean says Anchorage has so far been lucky to avoid ashfall, but airline passengers have been seriously inconvenienced by the explosions. Alaska Airlines and Penn Air canceled all of their flights in and out of Anchorage this afternoon. Both hope to resume operating in the morning. Era Aviation was still sending flights to Fairbanks, but shut down everything heading south. The company's vice president, Mike Lenormand, described the scene earlier at the Anchorage airport.
Well, it's interesting. You look across the ramp from our building, and frankly, there's only one airplane that I can see on the ground. After the eruption, many carriers and most carriers, it appears, have left the airport and have either relocated their aircraft into hangars or physically flown them out to airports where ash won't fall on the aircraft and affect them.
Scientists say Readout's activity generated a new lahar today, or muddy flow on the volcano. AVO's Stephanie Prejean says heat from the explosions melts the ice covering Readout, and then the water takes off down a drainage, picking up dirt, rocks, and trees as it chugs along.
Lahars are, they can't really be thought of as like a water flood. Because they're much more dense. It's more like concrete in a way because they have all of this rock and soil and other things entrained in them.
State and federal agencies are closely watching the lahars because the Drift River oil terminal sits at the base of the volcano. Coast Guard spokeswoman Sarah Francis says no one has yet been able to assess any potential damage from the recent explosions. But officials are optimistic the containment systems will hold, especially since tanks at the terminal survived the eruption 20 years ago.
We also saw mud flows in and around the tank farm, but we didn't see any release of any product during that period. So we're fairly confident that with that information, as well as the enhanced and armored dike system that exists now, we're in fairly good shape.
The tanks are currently holding 148,000 barrels of crude oil. The Alaska Volcano Observatory says volcanic tremor increased on Readout again today, beginning just after 3 p.m. With Cook Inlet as the backdrop, Governor Sarah Palin announced her pick for Alaska Attorney General today in downtown Anchorage at Resolution Park. Wayne Anthony Ross, a longtime Anchorage attorney and former assistant attorney general, is now the new attorney general. Governor Palin says she's glad Ross agreed to return to public service.
Wayne brings with him solid legal credentials and a vast legal knowledge, experience, and integrity.
Ross is a former vice president of the National Rifle Association and has in the past run for governor twice himself. Palin says he'll help develop the state's natural resources.
He's going to help Alaskans lower the cost of energy here in state and provide nationally towards energy independence those resources that are needed. He's going to protect Alaska's right to bear arms, and he's going to work tirelessly to manage our fish and game resources for abundance through science and not through politics.
The governor says making the announcement at Resolution Park was important to showcase development potential.
We want to show those vast resources that Alaska has been blessed with and allow this to kind of illustrate some of the potential that we have when you consider what is just over our shoulders, knowing that there is vast riches within these waters and all around us. We know that in the Attorney General's office, a mission there must be to protect and conserve and safely, responsibly, and ethically develop these resources for the maximum benefit of the people.
Ross says he is concerned with clearing a backlog of court cases and protecting the state constitution.
You know, we have energy development, developing our gas resources, the criminal justice system, the protecting Alaska's sovereignty, the problems that we have with outside influences trying to impose their will on us in the management of our resources.
As Attorney General, Ross replaces Talis Kohlberg, who resigned last month from the position. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the importance of aviation in Alaska.
Think about it. We fly 8 times more than our lower 48 counterparts.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP, teaming up with Alaskans since statehood and together looking toward a bright future. Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo goes the distance for the Iditarod, an event that brings people together in the spirit of Alaska's heritage. Wells Fargo, the next stage.
Legislative leaders this week have anticipated a face-to-face meeting scheduled today with Governor Palin, looking for some direct guidance on her plans regarding the federal economic stimulus money available to the state that she said she would not accept. Senate President Gary Stevens said the meeting is important, but he found out just a few hours before it was to be held this afternoon that the governor would not attend.
Her legislative liaison asked me, said the governor is not here. Are you willing to meet with the staff? I spoke with everyone in both caucuses, and the decision was that there's really limited value in our meeting with the staff when, in fact, we need to meet with the governor to find out exactly what it is that she is planning on applying for and what exactly she's not planning on applying for.
House Speaker Mike Chenault said lawmakers have had plenty of productive meetings with the governor's staff, and now they need to speak with her directly.
But I think we're in, day 65 or 66, and we have about 24 days left, and we need answers, and we need to talk to the person who can tell us yes or no. We don't need to talk with other members of the administration that will pass our message on to the governor. We need to find out answers to the questions.
What legislators want to know is whether the governor plans to veto any stimulus money they want to spend and whether she would refuse to spend money on specific projects she doesn't want. Lawmakers were especially surprised to see a press release from the governor saying they had canceled the meeting in order to hold a press conference. Senate President Gary Stevens.
To say that we canceled the meeting to have a press conference is absolutely not true, and someone should be brought to task on that. Simply, absolutely not true. We're here, we're ready, we're available. We've asked to meet with the governor next week again for the same reason, to talk about the stimulus package and to talk about the budgets. We've asked that to happen on Wednesday or Thursday, and we'll see what happens.
Governor Palin said today that her staff told lawmakers ahead of time that she was willing to meet with legislators by telephone. However, Speaker Chenault says that was not passed on to him until after their meeting had been canceled. It's long been common knowledge that aviation is crucial to Alaska, but for the first time, aviation's importance in the state has been quantified thanks to an economic assessment from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Northern Economics Incorporated analyzed data from interviews with airport managers, city managers, and community leaders, and responses to surveys with 600 Alaskans who have flown over the past 12 months. KTOO's Rebecca Shear has more.
As DOT Deputy Commissioner Christine Klein will tell you, many of the surveys contained a similar theme.
I'll pull some other ones here for you. We live off the road system, and the air travel is everything to us. Our airport, it is everything to us. Air travel is just everything to us.
More than 160 Alaska communities rely on air service as their sole mode of transportation. And air service is a major part of Alaska's economy. Airports and aviation generate 8% of the gross state product, or the total of all goods and services produced in the state for a given year. Alaska's GSP is approximately $44 billion, so aviation's economic contribution comes out to $3.5 billion. Aviation is also the state's fifth largest provider of income and employment. 10% of Alaska's jobs are related to aviation. That's more than each of several economic sectors: construction and manufacturing, health and education, hospitality and leisure, and trade.
I don't think it takes an awful lot of brain power to think this out. Alaska's aviation is key to the survival of Alaska.
DOT Commissioner Leo von Schaben began his Alaska career in the airplane industry, designing airports. He says he's especially wowed by the part of the economic assessment detailing how often Alaskans take to the skies.
Think about it. We fly 8 times more than our lower 48 counterparts. I go to Illinois to visit my sister, and I bet she's on an airplane once every 5 years. And probably a lot of Midwest people are like that. We do it 14, 15 times a year.
But it isn't just Alaska's people that fly.
Our goods, our foods, our supplies. In Alaska, 39 times more freight per capita comes through airports than comparable airports in lower 48.
Despite aviation's paramount position in the Alaska economy, Von Schaben and Klein say improvements are needed in the maintenance and operation of airports, for example, and the costs of fuel and energy.
There is another side regarding energy. We've had requests of lengthening airports so they can fly larger aircraft in there for hauling greater quantities of fuel.
And Klein says they're responding to as many of those requests as they can, because for so many Alaskans, the airport is, well, everything.
The airport is a fact of life for living out here in our villages. The airport is our roads, our highway, our ocean, and our entire lifeline. There's really, you couldn't say more.
In Juneau, I'm Rebecca Shear.
A group of Fort Wainwright soldiers is petitioning the Army to examine and improve the way it treats injured and sick service members. Sergeant Jesse Ramo is part of a group gathering signatures for a petition directed at Fort Wainwright commanders. Ramo says it's aimed at turning around behavior that violates Army protocol.
Medical neglect from the doctors, medical mistreatment from the doctors, as well as the chain of command, constant harassment and violating the profiles of the chain of command, forcing soldiers to do things that they aren't capable of doing, and deploying of soldiers that are medically unfit to deploy.
Ramo says he was ordered to deploy with the Stryker Brigade last fall, despite an injured shoulder. Ramo says he wasn't even capable of traveling to Iraq.
They kept telling me I was deploying regardless of whether or not I was having surgery or anything. The thing is, to get in the country, I would be forced to carry all of my gear, which exceeds a couple hundred pounds. Well, my response to that was, is how am I supposed to do that when I can't even move my arm?
Ramo says he was threatened with losing his rank, but persisted in his objection, and a postdoctor eventually submitted paperwork for his case to be heard by a medical discharge review board. He says he knows about a dozen other Fort Wainwright soldiers that have had similar experiences, including Chief Warrant Officer Adisa Ayatoro, who's facing court-martial proceedings this week for refusing to deploy due to health problems. The concerns at Fort Wainwright follow those of soldiers and veterans across the country that prompted a report by the Army Inspector General last year. The report released in January shows the system used for determining a soldier's fitness to deploy to be confusing. U.S. Army Alaska Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Allen says the system is multi-tiered.
The brigades have their own doctors, and you know, that's the starting level there. Then there's other levels up that reviews can be conducted for soldiers who are not quite sure that their health is at a deployable level. So it's not a one-stop review. It depends on the circumstance of the soldier. But the end result is that when soldiers deploy, they are healthy enough to deploy and carry out their mission.
Allen says he knows of no formal complaints filed with Fort Wainwright commanders alleging forced deployment or harassment. The Post Soldiers Group wants an external investigation into the treatment and deployment of sick and injured soldiers at Fort Wainwright. An Army spokesman quoted in USA Today says the military is making procedural changes to address the problem nationwide. The paper also reported that as of late last year, 45,000 medically unfit troops had been sent to combat since 2000.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. BP, teaming up with Alaskans since statehood and together looking toward a bright future. Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo goes the distance for the Iditarod, an event that brings people together in the spirit of Alaska's heritage. Wells Fargo, the next stage.
Most doctors in Alaska's cities have stopped accepting new Medicare patients. A new study from the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research found that only 13 primary care doctors in Anchorage who will see new Medicare patients, nearly half were at the Anchorage Neighborhood Health Clinic, where it is a federal requirement. Most non-working older Alaskans are forced to use Medicare as their primary insurance. The study did not find the same problem in rural areas of the state. Rosalind Frazier is a research associate at ICER who co-authored the study. She says doctors overwhelmingly cited one reason for turning Medicare patients away.
Our doctors told us during the survey that the reason they were choosing not to take Medicare patients was due to the reimbursement from Medicare.
Medicare reimbursement rates have recently increased. Did that make a difference for doctors here?
From our research, it doesn't appear as though it did make a difference. We surveyed the doctors last year, and we resurveyed those doctors that told us they were not taking new Medicare patients this year. And we contacted all but two of those doctors, and they were not taking new Medicare patients. The exception was two doctors that we found who were not taking new Medicare. However, they had hired a nurse practitioner that is now seeing new Medicare patients in their practice.
Are patients who can't find a doctor using emergency rooms more often? Are you finding that?
We didn't find that in our study. We were able to look at the Providence Hospital emergency room data, and we saw from the year 2000 that Medicare patients were not using the emergency room anymore from year to year. There's a seasonal variation, but that's all that we saw.
How many doctors are opting out of the Medicare system altogether? Is that something that you were able to determine in this study?
We were able to determine that in the study, and the greatest number of doctors that are opting out are 20 physicians in Anchorage. However, there's also a physician in Mattsu, two in Fairbanks, two in Kenai, and one in Juneau.
Did you find that the neighborhood health clinics are seeing more people who are being turned away from private practice doctors? Are they being inundated with Medicare patients?
We were able to note that over time, the community health center is seeing more patients. There's actually been a doubling, I believe, over the last 5 years in the number of patients that are being seen specifically at the Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center. There's a similar pattern at the Fairbanks Clinic. And we know that there's a clinic in the Mattsu Borough. However, it's only been open about 2 years, so we don't have enough information from them yet.
And what are some possibilities that perhaps you've uncovered in this research for improving the access Medicare patients have to primary care doctors?
Frankly, what we're seeing is here in Alaska, there have been ongoing meetings with regard to access to Medicare. And we know currently ideas are being discussed with regard to a Medicare clinic, expanding the community health centers, looking at reimbursing physicians that are willing to take on more Medicare patients. We know those are ideas being discussed, and we intend to look and see how those might impact access.
Rosalind Frazier is a research associate with the Institute of Social and Economic Research. U.S. ski team athletes won the team sprint events at the Cross Country Ski National Championships in Fairbanks last night. In the women's race, Vermont's Liz Steven and Morgan Smith paired up to win. Anchorage's Keegan Randall and Katie Ronsey took fourth place. In the men's race, fellow U.S. ski team Chris Cook and Torin Coos won. Anchorage skiers Anders Hagen and Lars Flora captured third place. This week's national championship races are giving some talented local teenagers a chance to ski against North America's best. Brothers Reese and Logan Honeman are among the nation's top cross-country skiers under 20 years old. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The Honeman brothers had it going at Junior Olympics earlier this month in Truckee, California. JOs bring together the country's best young skiers for national championship races in several age categories. 19-year-old Reese won gold in an older junior class race, while 15-year-old brother Logan swept all four Junior 2 boys races. It was Reese's last of five appearances at JOs and his second national title. He says he has high aspirations for moving up and racing at the senior level, but is taking the long view.
You're always, you know, looking down the road, and the road goes on for quite a while. So the Olympics next year, 2010, is probably a little bit early. So I'd like to, you know, I'd like to do well and maybe be close to that.
Hahnemann, a freshman at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, is following in his father's footsteps as an engineering student and ski racer. So far, he's foregone collegiate racing to train with the local FAST, or Fairbanks Alaska Ski Team program. Hahnemann trains 700 hours a year, much of it with his younger brother Logan, who he says has become a great partner on the trails.
A couple years ago, maybe would have answered that differently, but I think, no, definitely now it's, I think we have a good time training together. It's fun to have somebody just always there to do something with.
Logan Hahnemann says he gains a lot by working with his older brother and the other guys on the FAST team.
It's hard to train and get faster if you're training with people that are equal speed as you or slower, you know, so to have people like them to feed off of and to try to keep up with, you know, that's definitely really helped me a lot.
Hahnemann says his success at the Junior Olympics has motivated him to take skiing to the next level.
I'm already looking forward to training a lot in the summer, and my big goal for next year is to make the J1 Scandal Cup, going to Scandinavia to race for the U.S. I mean, that's my goal coming into next year at least, so I have something to reach for.
The FAST team was named the best boys club in the country at Junior Nationals. Coach Bill McDonald says siblings as good as the Hahnemanns are rare, a phenomenon he compares to New Hampshire Olympians Justin and Chris Freeman.
I was in New England when they were growing up, you know, so I think they were 3 or 4 years apart, just like Logan and Reese, and kind of exact same thing, you know, but that was a pretty impressive duo, and it appears that Reese and Logan could do kind of the same thing, you know, so they're just great to work with.
McDonald says the most important qualities the Hahnemann boys possess aren't athletic. He credits parents Carl and Nancy for raising good kids. Nancy Hahnemann, a former competitive swimmer, says they've tried to pass on what's worked for them.
The discipline for life, whatever it is, whether it's schoolwork or skiing or swimming, I think that's just really important. I think Carl and I both have been a big part of our lives.
Nancy Hahnemann says skiing has always been a way for the family to spend time together and that the boys make their own choices about training and racing. Reese and Logan Hahnemann have fared well at this week's national championships, finishing mid-pack in a field that includes many older, more experienced skiers. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
While the cross-country nationals continue in Fairbanks, heavy snowfall is severely hampering the U.S. Alpine Championships at Alyeska Resort in Girdwood. The bad weather canceled training runs yesterday and today. The championship race is scheduled for tomorrow. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Homer, Ben Stanton in Kenai, Rebecca Shear in Juneau, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide coverage for Alaskans who are denied health insurance due to a high-risk medical condition. For example, a person who has diabetes and has been rejected by an insurance company will be accepted by ACHIA. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. Information is also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo goes the distance for the Iditarod, an event that brings people together in the spirit of Alaska's heritage. Wells Fargo, the next stage.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.